Hello and welcome to the Beards and Bulldust podcast. I'm Aiden and this is my dad.
Yes, hello. Yes, it's me, Scott. Welcome to episode 26. Back on track, doing podcasts every week, which is good. How was your week?
Boring.
Boring.
I mean, I watched the Batman movie yesterday. I won't give anyone any spoilers, but I thought it was kind of boring.
Yep. Yep. That sells it for me.
And then I had like an exam at school, so nothing hugely interesting.
Okay, all right. That's rather unexciting. My week was probably about normal. Tried to do a couple of days back in the office, which was good. Still pretty quiet in town. Still not a great deal of people, so. And they're probably struggling to have more people back in town because of things like the fuel prices and stuff.
Yeah.
Fuel prices are through the roof. For anyone old enough to remember, this is not the first time we've had high fuel prices. It's the first time it's probably been this high. But we've had high fuel prices.
But they're probably going to keep it like this.
Well, they reckon it's going to be a couple of months that it's going to stay really high. There's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing around who's responsible for what. Each nation's meant to have so much fuel that it has in stocks, like in holds, like basically oil. We refine it here.
Yeah.
But Australia only has really two proper-sized refineries, one here in Brisbane and one down in Melbourne. Town in Geelong, and there's a few other bits and pieces of smaller refineries and stuff, but nothing on the scale of those two. They're our two biggest ones.
Yeah.
And we're meant to hold, and I'm not exact on the figures, I think it's something around 90 something days or 90 days worth of oil as a reserve. We had, I think in total, about 89 days of oil held here in Australia. Some of that was still in transit, and some of that was still on boats. Some of it was actually in tanks.
So we only got one day?
So about 90.
Oh.
We're meant to have 90 days as a minimum to try and help combat fluctuations in prices. Bearing in mind, fuel's constantly coming in, so it's not like we've not got no more coming in for 90 days.
Yeah.
But it is quite high. There's been a lot of people call on the government to axe fuel tax, which is about 40-something cents per litre you pay in tax.
Yeah.
They've been asked to axe that, which they won't. You'll probably find that ScoMo will keep that in his back pocket, and that might be a bit of an election promise, that if the fuel crisis continues, we will take our tax away for a little while to help. Because, you know, when it's $2.20 a litre, that'll bring it back down to $1.80.
Wow.
Problem solved. Not really, but it helps. And then a little bit later on, I'll go into some things that people can actually do to save fuel. A few different options there. There's also some ongoing supply shortages and stuff because of the floods and because of COVID and because of fuel and because of all that. There's some shortages.
Yeah.
You know, still some groceries you still can't get, bits and pieces that are still not available. That will go on for some time. The supply chain might recover and the stuff might be available, but it's going to be freaking expensive because someone's got to pay for that fuel and everything comes on a truck.
Yeah.
So, you know, at some point someone's got to pay and that generally be the consumer. So not only we have to pay heaps to drive to the supermarket, but you'll have to pay heaps to buy the stuff at the supermarket.
Yeah.
So, fun and games. Get your food delivered. That's all I can say. There's still a lot of stuff around the flood impacts. One of the things that bothers me the most that I've seen quite recently is the all those negative comments about defence members and stuff like that. Seen that quite a fair bit throughout this week.
What?
And you see that fucking stupid-ass lady down somewhere, fucking Logan or some damn thing, hurling abuse at some army truck drivers who had stopped at the servo to get something neat.
Why?
Because she thought they weren't doing anything to help the flood.
What are they supposed to do?
I don't know.
Shoot flood water?
I don't know. It's the same as one of the New South Wales members for Parliament, which might be federal, but anyway, we'll say New South Wales. She made a comment and took a picture of a flight crew having food in the, you know, in the eatery area of the airport. You know, saying, you know, they should be out saving lives. People have to eat, lady. You're obviously there eating, filling your fat guts of food, and people need to eat.
They aren't fucking super soldiers. They're just soldiers.
Just soldiers, you know, soldiers. And it really irks me because, you know, I've been there, right? So for people who probably don't know and probably don't have context of what would happen to a defence member in an emergency like that, you would rock up in the morning as normal, and some spirit would come out and go, we've been deployed to go and help with the floods, go home, get your shit, and come back. And you might have an hour to do that. Two tops.
Yeah.
Right, so if you're a family person, and you've got kids and you're in the defence, you might go to work, you know, say goodbye to your wife and kids or whatever, your husband and kids or whatever, go to work, your kids will go to school, when your kids come back from school, you're not there. Because you're already on a freaking plane somewhere.
Yeah.
With everything you think you need, you're gonna need, no concept of when you're probably gonna be back. Probably don't even know exactly where you're going. And then when you get there, you've got to try and help and do everything you can. Plus, you've got everything else in your life that you still have to worry about. So you still have to worry about, you know, your family and all those types of things and all your other commitments. But you're there to help. And then when you're done and you come home, you generally have a bag full of muddy, dirty, filthy clothes because you generally got nowhere to wash them when you're out helping, right? Everything's fucking ruined. You come back with filthy stuff that you then use your own washing machine to clean and your own things to clean. So what this numbnut lady who's seen all the drivers were, they were all in clean uniforms. Correct, lady. That was probably only their clean freaking uniform, and it was probably one of the worst ones they've got. And they've got to wear some clean clothes so they don't have a filthy truck to drive home in.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, it's fucking highly likely, a couple of them bloody hand washed them in a sink and hung them out to dry over a fence just to have a clean uniform to come home in.
Yeah.
You know, it's the concept of some stupid woman hurling abuse at, you know, defense people because they're in a clean uniform shows no context or understanding what those people actually go through. And if you don't understand, that's fine. But you don't hurl abuse.
Yeah.
You leave them to get on with their job. You know, they could have been heading back from a floodwater. They could have been running supplies. You know, that could have been the only 15-minute break they've had the whole damn day. And they cop abuse out of some shitbox car from some foul-ass woman about the fact they're standing there having something to eat. I find it appalling.
Yeah.
It's just appalling. Same with that flight crew. They've probably been working monstrous hours. You know, they're either a plane crew running supplies or they're a chopper crew. And they've probably been doing hours and hours and hours of flights. The only place they've got to eat is that eatery of the airport because, you know, you can't just get out of your plane and there's like a KFC right next door.
Yeah.
You have to go and eat somewhere, and that's the place you have to go and eat. They probably fucking don't want to, but they've got no choice. And it's the people that make the ill-informed comments that irks me even more. Because if you're not informed on something, you stay your ass out of it and you don't make comment.
Yeah.
Right? If that woman who was hurling abuse was their fucking superior, it's probably a different story because they're probably doing something they're not meant to. But it's clear by her and her shit-mouth son that they're not fucking military superiors. They're just shit people.
Yeah, I must feel like shit. You know, you're working all day. You know, for the flight guys, they're flying choppers and shit all day. And then the one time you take a 15-minute break out of the whole day of doing hard work, you get some shit. Yeah. Fucking woman like that goes up at you. Yep. You don't get, you know, recognition or a thank you the whole day, but the one time you take a 15-minute break for yourself, you get abuse.
Yeah. You just cop it from someone. And it's ridiculous, right? People don't understand the sacrifice made by defense people from away from their daily normal life to go and help. And they'd be gladly there helping. It's not like they would be not want to be there to help. They'd get out gladly. They'd go and do whatever they need to do. They will get filthy, muddy, haul heavy ass shit, be tired, broken, and sore at the end of the day, and do it day after day. Like, would not. They'd gripe and moan because with soldiers gripe and moan. It's what we do. But they'd still do it. Yeah. And you get all those people hurling abuse who aren't doing it because they're too busy posting shit on social media thinking they're fucking some type of hero. And it's like, you're not. Get out of your freaking car and go and help some people with a flood water yourself.
Yeah.
Like go away and leave other people alone and get to work helping if you think that's the most important thing that's needed at that time.
Yeah.
I was just, when I seen some of those comments, I'm like, you ill-informed idiots.
I've seen, like, this is sort of similar, but I saw something today about, it was, you know, lots of stuff in America of police shootings,
mm-hmm.
a lot of crazy people. And it was this, you know, mentally ill person. They had a gun. They ran at the cops. The cops told him, you know, put the gun down and all that stuff. Yep. And they shot him and killed him because he ran at them with a gun. And then everyone on Twitter is like, why couldn't you just de-escalate the situation? How the fuck do you de-escalate a man running at you with a gun?
Yeah, yeah.
Other than shooting at him.
Yeah, yeah. See, if you were like, who was it that ran that dude over? Was that Tasmanian police or Victorian police? I can't remember.
It was Victorian.
Victorian. Yeah. See, if you're in Victoria, you would have people complaining that they're hitting with a squad car because that's what you do in Victoria, right? You know, someone's coming at you with a knife or a gun and hit them with a car.
Yeah.
Right? That's de-escalating a problem. You take a small threat and thump it with a bigger one. That's de-escalating a problem. And it's incredibly, like, it's very easy in hindsight to make a comment like that about how it should have been handled. It's much harder to be in the situation trying to handle it in the situation at that time.
Yeah.
Probably plenty of things they didn't know. They probably didn't know at the time that he probably had mental issues. They wouldn't have known what his mental state was. They wouldn't have known what was in the gun. They wouldn't have known any. They had to act on what they saw.
And then, you know, some things like that could be solved with better training.
Mm.
And then you see stuff in America and they're like, defund the police. And how do you get better police if you can't train them better?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's always going to be circumstances where, you know, the action is questioned. There's no stepping away from that, right? It's really, really hard to train someone to do something. It is the easiest way to teach them is to actually physically do it. So all those cops, we will learn a huge lesson just from that one occurrence.
Yeah.
Right? Probably learnt fucking heaps. But it's really, really hard to train for. There are so many things to take into account at that point in time. And the primary one amongst that is I don't want to be fucking shot.
Yeah.
And I have a means in a way of ensuring I don't get shot or my other team, my colleagues don't get shot.
Yeah.
And shoot the dude.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that fucking difficult and to like, concept.
You know, I feel bad because he was, you know,
yeah, absolutely
insane. In the membrane.
Yep.
But there's not, in that one situation though, it's like, well, there's just nothing else you can really do.
Well, yeah.
And he was trying to do suicide by cop because he tried to kill himself with his own gun, but I think he failed. So I don't even think he actually had any bullets to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So if the police did know that, they probably wouldn't have shot him.
Yeah.
And just kind of wrestled him or something. I'm not
sure.
Yeah,
yeah. And probably would just knocked him over, yeah.
But, yeah, so, and then, you know, he ran at them so that, he knew the cops were going to shoot him.
Yeah. Look, and that's the sad part, right?
It's a messy situation.
It's a messy situation. It's never nice when you're confronted with that, you know, that level of mental ill health. It really isn't. It's very, very hard to understand, and I won't say very hard. It's freaking almost impossible to understand the mental state of someone.
Yeah.
Yep.
His story was he thought some mafia and his ex girlfriend were plotting to assassinate him, so he was trying to find the CIA.
Yep.
So he went to a like some government office place.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, and then when you get to that level, what are you gonna do? Like, what are you gonna do? Any action from those cops probably wouldn't have been enough. Had they let him live, and they'd not killed him, and that gun still had bullets in it, and then he'd opened up on someone else as they were trying to fight him and struggle for the gun, and he shot some poor kid, the cops would have got crucified for not shooting him.
Yeah.
You know, they just fucking try and negotiate with him, and he ends up taking his own life, or you know, killing one of them, and because they're hesitating on taking the shot, well, they're crucified for that, for not responding quickly enough. So it's a really difficult situation that they face, and police officers all around the world face circumstances like that.
Yeah.
You know, regularly. A very, very hard thing to face. And then even harder when you get all the social warriors after that putting in their fucking professional opinion on the fucking how to manage the escalation, like they're some professional negotiator or something.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, it's, if you haven't been in the circumstance, you don't know shit. That's just as simple as it is.
Yeah.
And if you have been in the circumstance and you have been there and experienced it, then you can maybe make some commentary about how it should have been dealt with, whether it was right, wrong, or indifferent. But if you're just some miserable human being who has no concept of that, then you have no right to make a statement about how it should be dealt with.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Twitter's full of that. It's just full of people who think they know fucking everything, but realistically, all they know is how to write something in less than 128 characters. That's the limit of their abilities.
Yeah.
I'm on Twitter. I can say that. I don't use it very much. It's shit.
I'm not on Twitter, which is amazing. Life's great.
Yeah. How's those fuel prices?
My life is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And before the cops got there in that clip, there was some people crossing the road while he was shooting his gun. The gun was a Mosin Nagant, and he was shooting it in the air.
Yeah.
And fucking across the road, some people were just sort of looking at him and then crossed the road all calmly while he's shooting in the air with a gun.
Yeah, see, that's getting pretty bad as a culture when old mate can just come and pretend he's at a Mexican fucking wedding and just start shooting rounds in the air, and everyone's just like, hey, how you going, Keith? Good to see ya.
Like, when you run away, like, they just looked at him and crossed the road. And
yeah, that's a bigger worry there, that behavior is probably not isolated behavior. If they're so comfortable with it, it's probably fucking not isolated. It's probably been happening for a while. We are in a crazy, crazy world at the moment. Yeah, it just seems to be getting crazier. I think this year's just gonna be a crazy year.
It's just gonna get worse and worse next year.
Next year just be fucking aliens and shit. Anyway, we'll move along. We'll try and get some more positive news, but I think some of my news is not positive. Anyway, we'll quickly do an old lady update. See the old lady at any time this week?
I haven't.
You haven't?
No.
It's been pretty quiet. Maybe she can't come outside because the fuel for a mobility scooter is too expensive.
Oh, no. I don't even think she has one. She just has one of those, like, rolling things.
Oh, a little rolling thing. With a
handbag built into it.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully she's okay and still around. We'll see what happens next week. Quickly on the car news. So, fresh off the car news, Subaru have announced there is no more STI.
Yeah.
No more WRX STI.
So, the Evos are dead.
Yep.
And now the STIs are dead.
Yep.
Aren't they going to bring it back later on as electric, isn't
that? That's what they've said. They said they're exploring the avenues for electrification. What it boils down to, realistically, at the end, is mainly their emissions targets.
Yeah.
They just can't meet them.
Why don't they make all their other shit cars just all electric? Why do they have to make their sport ones?
Yeah. I reckon anything where you go, I don't think it needs a turbo, or where you say it doesn't need to be fast, electric.
Yeah.
You know, if you're just going to make a car which appeals to people going from fucking one suburb to another, electric.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure there's more, like, I don't know, fucking... What do they have? What are they, like, SUVs and stuff? Are they, like, newer Foresters?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more Foresters than there are newer STIs.
Yeah.
It's not going to give them a lot of, like...
Yeah, so what I reckon they're doing is the market at the moment for SUVs is massive because every goose seems to think that they need a bigger car to fit in with everyone else who has a bigger car.
Yeah.
So they're just tailoring their build to that market. So by dropping the STI, they can afford to move that emission across to their bigger SUVs and build more of those. So it's just about managing their emissions.
Yeah.
The downside is, I reckon they will kill it probably about 3 or 4 years, and then come back with this brand new STI all electric.
And it's just the most like boring
fucking thing. Yeah, yeah. It'll look like a electric BMW.
Yeah.
it'll be like, why is the front stupid? Like, it's just all it's going to be.
Plastic grill.
Yep. Yep. Straight plastic grill. It'll, being Subaru, it'll fucking probably plug in from the roof or something. Like, it'll just be all weird. And it won't be an STI, because for me, for it to be a WRX STI, you must be able to go and rally drive the thing.
Yeah.
If they build one and it can't do that at a basis, then it's not a WRX STI, because that's what the freaking thing's meant to be.
And WRX STIs are just like turbo-tuned Imprezas.
Yep, yep.
How do you turbo and tune a electric engine?
No, you could probably put a turbo on the side of it, but it wouldn't do anything.
Bluetooth turbo it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just have the outlet or something, just, or the inlet, whatever they call it, where the air comes into the motor. Instead of coming into the motor, have it coming into the cabin, like aircon or something.
Yeah, the turbos are just going to be used for, like, cooling down the batteries now.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't overheat.
Yep, just blow air across it.
Cool down the CPUs.
Yeah, yeah, and then just a little speaker with a little fake blow-off valve sound.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's sad.
So that is the sadness of that. And I don't think we'll see it come back in any shape or form close to what it's ever been.
They're going to re-release it as a fucking electric SUV, probably.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be something really stupid. Not much else in the way of car news. Car prices are becoming massively expensive. It's becoming even more difficult to get a new car. So my tip for buying a car at the moment is don't.
Yeah.
That's the simple tip, is don't. Because whatever you're going to buy now, go to the market and buy now, you are going to pay way too much for.
Just buy a Prius. With these,
yep,
with these petrol prices, just buy a Prius.
Yeah, yeah. Better still, go and buy a Nissan Leaf.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm serious. Then go and buy a Nissan Leaf. Basic as and boring as hell little car. However, it'll just do what it needs to do as an electric car. And if you're going to be miserable and boring and have an electric car, you might as well have a Leaf.
Or a Prius. Because Priuses are funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Priuses look ridiculous now. It's like they're like Elvis. It's gained weight. It's
become this funny.
Bigger boxy.
No, you get like an older, like 2008 or something, like the hybrids.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then supercharge a petrol engine.
And then hemi swap it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Put a Hellcat engine or something into it.
Yeah. I've seen, I saw this video. It's from a while ago, but this guy's like, oh, you know, with the current fuel prices, this was ages ago. It's not current.
Yep.
Yeah. And it was like, I've got Priuses for everyone. And it's like his front yard, he's got like 5 there.
Yep.
And then he opens up his gate and he's got like fucking 50 Priuses. All for sale.
Yeah. Yeah. And people will be buying them now. They just will. And they're horrible, hateful cars, the Priuses. Like, I much prefer, I've driven a Leaf, and I much prefer the Leaf over a Prius. I much prefer a Leaf over an MG.
Yeah.
Like, the MG looks nicer when you look at it, but when you actually drive it and you have to touch most of the switches and dials and, like, door, you realize.
What about the Hyundai?
It's shit. Nah. Hyundai's not much different to the MG. Hyundai's probably a bit better to drive than the MG. So the Kona's probably feels better to drive. The MG feels way too disconnected from the road, and it doesn't actually feel like you're driving your car. It feels like you're driving the car in front of you, because it's that disconnected. Like, the steering has no feel. You can't feel what's happening with the front wheels. It's like
using the steering wheel in Need for Speed Heat.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, there's no feedback. There's nothing happening. You don't know what's going on. You could be turning sharp left for, you know. If you closed your eyes, you wouldn't know which way you were going.
Yeah.
The Kona is probably a little bit more responsive. It has more feel. Not as comfortable as the MG. Pretty much the same fit out type and feel. It all feels plasticky. It all feels
like
cheaply made.
After sitting in the Kona, because, you know, I sat down in the Kona.
Yeah.
Like, it's got less space in the interior than the fucking Skoda Fabia.
Yeah, yeah, it's
all... But it's a bigger car. I don't understand why people buy them, because they aren't bigger. They are not bigger.
No, they're not.
They look bigger.
Less room, less leg room. It's just horrible.
But hate people who like SUVs.
But you get in the Leaf, right? The Leaf feels like a normal car. Yeah, it's electric, and it has a bit of a whine to it, but it's quiet. It's if you just want a commute car, you should get those. I encourage anyone, if you have a car that you only go from A to B and you don't give a toss, go and trade it right now for a Nissan Leaf. Go and buy one.
Yeah, help the environment.
Help the environment. It will help our fuel prices, because there won't be such high demand, because you won't need it. And you can leave all the fuel for the rest of us that want to go and do burnouts and shit. So this, now I'm feeding into my fuel saving tips. Now everyone's done articles. Nearly every single car news place has done a fuel saving article, and they all do the same fucking things. Some of them I agree with, them, some of them don't. But anyway, here's some of mine. Slash stolen some of everyone else's, but they're not telling you anything new that's rocket science, so it's not freaking like copyrighted or shit. Number one, make sure your air filter's clean.
Yeah.
So when you get a car, for your younger guys, when you go and buy a car from a dealership, if it's a secondhand car, the very first thing you do is you get it home, you take the air filter apart, you throw the old one out, and you put a new one in, because it's the last thing they will replace or change. Yeah. And if it sat in a dealership for a long time, just had someone start it once a day, the air filter is going to be clogged with shit. So a clean air filter will help save fuel.
And they aren't too expensive either. They're like, what, $40?
No, yeah. Go and buy a K&N filter for it, if it'll fit. If not, just get a bog standard paper one, $20, right? Cheap as chips. If your car will breathe, then it's going to use less fuel.
Yeah.
If it's getting the air through it needs to, it'll work fine. Clean your mass airflow sensors. So your fuel injected cars, your modern injected cars, right where the air comes in, there'll be a little tube, and inside that little tube are airflow sensors. They just look like little tiny little like diode type things, and the air runs past it and it picks up the air quality. If they're filthy, your car will think it's taking in filthy air, and therefore it'll adjust the fuel and everything to compensate for the fact it's not getting beautiful clean air. It'll use more fuel. So you can go and buy air filter spray, MAF sensor spray. It's just the alcoholic spray. You spray it on, you don't have to wipe it off, it just dries off. Cost you about $20. I brought one like 6 years ago and I've still got the same bottle. So go and get one of those, do that. That will help. When you're driving, and say you're driving a manual, always cruise along in your best gear possible, right? So your highest gear. So cruise along in fifth where you can. Always, if you're cruising, don't cruise in like third or second, because it sounds good, and when you let it off, it does fucking big bangs and shit from the friggin' overrun. That's just fuel going out the back of your car.
That is like tons of money.
Yeah, yeah. So you're paying probably, if you do a normal trip to the city, you're probably paying $3 in backfire.
That's kind of worth it, though.
Yeah, yeah. It depends how much. But yeah, depends how much you can get out of it. But if you cruise along in the best gear possible, the Skoda, when you start to drive the Skoda, has a really cool feature where it'll tell you what gear you should be in.
Yeah.
And if you're in that gear, then the engine's running as efficiently as it can. Simple as that. If you're in an automatic, sort of screwed, but just try and not like change your acceleration too sharply, and it'll sort of just cruise along in its slowest gear anyway.
Yeah.
Following on from that, cruise control is king. So if you're doing any speed more than 80 and you're not in traffic, so say you're like cruising along a bit of a country road or you're on the highway, cruise control.
Yeah.
If you have a car that doesn't have cruise control, then you're on your own. If your car has cruise control, use cruise control as much as you possibly can.
Does the Skoda have cruise control?
Correct, yes. Oh. It has cruise control. So what cruise control does, separate to what a human will do, is a cruise control will only respond to the environment around it and the engine demand. So only accelerate when it needs to in very small increments. When you're a human being, your foot doesn't work that way and your brain doesn't work that way. So you'll speed up and slow down and speed up and slow down and speed up and slow down. That's how you go along the road, effectively.
Yeah.
What the car will do is put a bang on the speed you've told it to and use minimum throttle application to keep it there. So if you're going along a flat road, the cruise control will outdo you on fuel economy.
Yeah.
Every day of the week. Don't use it when you're in built-up traffic. Don't use it when you're going less than 60 because it sort of won't work very well. It just when you're doing less than 60, stay in control of the car. Don't cruise control it. Pump your tires up. So if you've got massive camber on your tires, like we've seen at the meets, you're actually doing really well at the moment. That will help your fuel economy because it reduces your rolling resistance on the road. So what you want to do when you need to save fuel is reduce your rolling resistance. So if you have your tires pumped down to make them more grippy around the corners, that's going to use more fuel.
Yeah.
Because the car actually has to push that rubber and make it move because it's contacting the road.
Yeah.
So you pump them up a bit and go just a little bit higher than the recommended pressure. So, you know, 1 or 2 PSI bar, whatever you're going to do, go a little bit higher. And what I'll do is just pump the tire up a little bit more, reduce the contact patch on the ground. That's going to wear your tires quicker. So don't do it forever. Only do it for when you need to save fuel at the moment. Because you want you want the tire to be evenly contacted on the ground. So that's where dudes run massively huge camber. What they have to do is change their tires every few weeks because the bit that's contacting the ground is the bit that wears out.
Can't they just like swap one side over?
Well, they can as long as it's not one directional tire tread. So if it's two directional, whatever that is called, then yes, you can take it off the rim, flip it around, put it back on. But some treads are only designed to go in one direction. So when you do that, you flip it around and you go to drive somewhere, it feels like you're driving on a sea of fish. It's just sliding all over the place because the tread is going in the opposite direction to what it's designed to.
So
it's not giving you grip. It's taking away grip, I suppose. Moving along, don't put more than half a tank of fuel in your car. Now, it's very easy to get caught up, and I've done it many, many times, is you rock up to a servo, you find a place that's like 20 cents cheaper than everywhere else, and they go, I'm going to fill up because it's cheap. Don't. I know you think you're saving money, but you have to haul that fuel around. So if you put 50 litres of fuel in, you've got to haul, more or less, probably a bit less, than 50 kilos around until you burn that fuel off. Which means your car's going to work harder while it's got that fuel in it. Any saving you've made at the pump is going to be gone. It's just going to evaporate.
Yeah.
So leave it about half. Don't let it get much lower than a quarter and just set it in that bracket and go there. If you let your car run down further than a quarter, you can start bringing shit through your filters and stuff like that, which can make your car run worse. Try to not go too much below a quarter where you can. I do on a Skoda on occasion. Get down to when the light comes on just because I get fuel in it so infrequently.
Yeah.
Like, you know, between a quarter and when the light comes on is like 2 weeks. So, you know, it's just what it is. Going from that, the best top tip, walk. Don't drive. Or take the bus.
Or ride a bike.
For some journeys, some short journeys, you're much better walking, riding the bike, taking the bus, whatever. I work in the city. Up until recently, the parking's been free or hugely discounted in the city. Still not driving into the city.
Yeah.
Cost me $4 each way on the bus to go from where I am into the city. It would cost me 3 to 4 times that in the car.
Yeah.
That's without parking. So it's not worth it financially. Best thing you can do is not drive when you don't need to. Additionally, if you do have to drive, avoid stop starts. So try to not get caught up at traffic lights all the time. It's a concept that I used to, you know, talk to people about, teach people about. This concept I use quite a fair bit called the stale green. Right? Use it quite a fair bit in trucks. So if you're coming up to a set of traffic lights and it has been green the entire time you have seen it, the longer you see it green, the more it's going to change to amber and to red.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're coming along a long section of the road and you look way ahead and that light's green way ahead, you can almost put money on it by the time you get to it, it isn't going to be green.
Yeah.
So you start to anticipate that, and that's what I do in the car sometimes. I'll see a green light way ahead, and I'll start to anticipate it's not going to be that, so I'll start to back off the throttle because I know I'm not going to make it through. Any fuel I'm going to use getting to it, I'm going to burn away when I touch the brakes. So you start to back off early, anticipating that stale green. Chances are, as you get closer to it, it changes to orange and then it goes to red, and you have to stop at it anyway.
Yeah.
So you just limit that run up to the lights. And that's really about it. They're all my fuel-saving tips. Coming from a former owner of an XD Falcon with a 4.1-litre six-cylinder in it, I know how to save fuel because it knew how to drink it. It would take me like... Even back in the day, it was like nearly $80 to fill the car up.
Jeez.
And if you fanged it, you'd be back the next day filling the car up again. So I know how to save fuel, and there's some tips for saving fuel.
So basically, you need... The best you can do for a petrol car is slam your daily. It's also better in case someone wants to steal your catalytic converter.
Yep.
You just slam your daily.
Yep.
Tons and tons of camber.
Mm-hmm.
Get a Japanese car because the four cylinders are going to save you more fuel.
Yep.
Preferably like an SR20 or something. Yep. I heard those are pretty good.
Yeah.
Pump your tires up.
Yep.
And then, you have to, you know...
Get a massive, big-ass pod filter for it.
Yep.
Fit that.
The more air you can get in, the better.
Yep. Pop one of your headlights out to get air to go in through it. Yep. So you get more air in.
Turbos are really more fuel efficient than superchargers, so turbo it.
Yep. And logic says the bigger turbo you get, the more fuel efficient it's going to be. So yep. Get like a turbo the size of a dustbin and put that on it.
Yeah, like 20 PSI.
Yep.
Get a massive exhaust because that's going to let all that, you know.
It's going to let the exhaust gases run away from it really efficiently.
Yep.
And don't worry if it's banging. If it's banging, it's just helping.
Yeah. So, yeah, there we go. You need is a completely, like, drift spec S15.
Well, what I was going to say is, going on those things and what I've experienced at some of those meets, what you need is an EK Civic.
Yeah, that too. either a Civic.
Or something like that. Yeah.
But then, you know, Civics have the VTEC, which are meant to be revved to their mind.
Yeah.
So they explode, so... You need a Silvia. Most fuel efficient car during these times.
Yep. Yeah. that's not something any Silvia owner ever thought.
Yeah.
So we'd have the most fuel efficient car available. And if you take all the seats out, that's even better. Just leave the driver's seat and
lots of weight reduction means less fuel being used.
Yep.
So roll cage, all the seats gone, all the interior gone. Yep. You only need one bucket seat for more weight reduction.
Yep.
Get a quick release steering wheel.
Yep.
That weighs less. You don't need airbags. Just don't crash it. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Take all the springs and shocks out of it and just weld your axle straight to the other side of the body. And what else can you do to one of those? Take all the wings off. It doesn't need any wings on it.
Yeah.
Nothing. Make it flat as a tack.
You could completely clean out the engine bay and just have an engine. You don't need batteries. You don't need whatever.
All the emission controls. All that. You don't need
no electrics.
No. Don't need none of that.
Aircon just uses more fuel and air and don't need that.
Just make sure you've got a manual one so someone can bump start it for you and then you're fine.
Get a nice big intercooler in the front. You can get more air in that way.
Yeah. Cut all that unnecessary front.
You don't need a front bumper either. Let's take that off.
That blocks airflow.
Yeah.
There we go. We've just spec'd an efficient car for you. Don't worry about a leaf. Go and do all that stuff to a Silvia and you'll be fine.
Yep.
On to a little bit of gaming news. So, PlayStation have announced that they are completely cutting off Russia.
They can't play Fortnite in Russia.
Yeah, so they have cut sending any gaming consoles, any games. They have cut access to the App Store. They have cut access to the release of games and the ability to access to play anything PlayStation online if you're in Russia.
I really hate to live in Russia right now. It's going to be like, if that happened to us, we'd be stuck with like, you know, for example, in the grocery stores, with all the Coles shit.
Yeah. Well, see, what I'm mindful of, what this is sort of starting to make me worry is, we're doing all this stuff. I'm pretty sure Putin doesn't play PlayStation.
He doesn't give two shits.
The thing is, you're going to start to piss off all the people who are actually on everyone else's side. And eventually all the Russians are going to go, well, fuck it then. We'll all fucking go to war.
Okay.
It's just, everyone needs to just like calm down a little, right? Think of what the impact could be, and if you've got people on your side and you go, hey, instead of going to war, play Gran Turismo 7.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we're taking that from you. And they'll be like, oh, fuck it, I'm going to war then. Like,
fuck
just,
you.
Yeah, yeah, it's just like, calm down.
Let's think of Germany.
Mm.
Let's think of Treaty of Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always talking about this now because it landed in history.
Yeah, it's your thing now.
Treaty of Versailles, they put the blame on Germany, even mm-hmm. though, in my opinion, Germany didn't start it. Some dude got killed in some other country.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the whole world pissed off the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
America, Britain, and France also pissed off Italy, who then joined Germany in World War II.
Yep.
Pissed off Japan, which then got bombed.
Yep.
It's just... Maybe just calm down a little.
Yeah. There's sanctions and things you can do, and any sanction against, you know, like Russia should be against anything that can affect, you know, like Putin's plans and you know, their ability to mobilize and their defenses and hit them financially and stuff like that. But you have to be careful of who you actually start to piss off, because you could piss off the people who are indifferent, who don't want a war, don't care about it, don't want no part of it. You're then going to piss them off to the point of going, well, the whole fucking world's against us, so we might as well just join the cause.
Yeah.
Because it's just Putin's gripe. The whole world's fucking against us, so let's go.
Because like, Putin doesn't give two shits that his people aren't getting fucking PlayStations.
No. I mean, I get it. I get it to a degree, right? Everyone's trying to make a stand, and the best way you can make a stand is to not support them and stuff like that.
But you're not supporting the people. Like, that's...
But, you know, you're saying... What we're saying as a world is all of Russia... All of Russia are evil, and we need to cut off all of Russia. And it's like, no, like, Russia's bad, and what they're doing is bad as a nation. And
but that's
what
all
its
the
leaders,
higher ups and stuff. Yeah. That's Putin and the generals and whatever.
Now what their leaders are doing is bad, and it's horrible, and it should stop. And there should be intervention to stop that. All of this intervention isn't fucking helping it. It isn't going to make a shit bit of difference, right? You want intervention? I can mobilize a few armies. There's probably a couple of armies, and I probably know a fair few people who are more than willing to wander over there and start shooting at some Russians. Right? It fucking ended in about a day. This sort of stuff can potentially make it worse, because you take people who are indifferent and you make them go the way that their country is saying the world treats them.
Yeah.
So I bet you any money, fucking Russian leadership will be saying to their people, you know, the rest of the world doesn't care about us. The rest of the world fucking hate us. We need to fucking take over the world, blah, blah, blah. And then fucking some dude some dude goes to buy something, and he can't because that company's fucking annexed the entire people of Russia. And he goes, well, fuck it, I'm off on the cause. I'm going to fight too.
Yeah.
So you just, I just think people need to be a little bit more aware of what they're doing.
Because, you know, you look at, you know, you don't want your people to be killed by, you know, Russians. Yeah, you know, absolutely. You don't want Russians killing innocent people. Mm, but now the rest of the world is targeting what is the civilian population of Russia, which is not just as bad, but it's still bad. Like, they don't have any part in it. Why would you cut off their stuff? I don't think that the Russian leadership give two shits about the PlayStation not coming to Russia.
Yeah, someone would have written in and went, I can't access the PlayStation store because of your war, you need to stop. And they would have just screwed it up, threw it in the bin. Like, I didn't care about that.
Yeah.
So it's bizarre. Anyway, on to other news. Gotham Knights has a release date. So the Gotham Knights game, which I'm all excited about, has a release date. So 25th of October.
This year.
It's meant to come out last year, didn't, because COVID or whatever. Is coming out this year, October 25th, which I'm excited about because it's based on The Court of the Owls. So it should be good, and it's Gotham Knights. It's not Batman. So it doesn't have Batman in it.
Oh, so who do you play as?
You'll play as, I guess, Nightwing, Red Hood, Robin, Batgirl.
Yeah.
You know, all the other
characters. Is it made by the same people who made, like, Arkham?
I don't think it's from the same people. I have to check, but I think it's from the same guys that made Arkham.
Yeah.
Which would be good, because Arkham was good.
Yeah.
The Arkham series was really good. This is not got Batman, so it's not going to be Arkham, but it's still going to be pretty good. So I'm excited for that. I just need to get Gran Turismo finished before October 25th. Otherwise, I'll do nothing for like a year. On to a last bit of news, because I'm trying to diversify my news here. There's some space news, some very interesting space news.
Ooh.
So we all know about the, well, probably no one knows about it. There's this plan to have a moon base and like a base on the moon where we can spread ourselves amongst the stars, effectively. The first step of that is going to be happening next month with the launch of the Capstone Cube satellite. So it's this tiny little cube satellite, insignificant to most things, that's being launched. And it's going to orbit the moon. But more specifically, it's going to orbit the moon pretty well in the middle of the point where the moon and the Earth orbit. So it's going to stay in this really stable orbit around the moon.
Yeah.
It's going to do some mapping and some testing and stuff like that. But what it's there to develop is the ability for spacecraft that go into space to be navigated and guided by another spacecraft. So at the moment, when a spacecraft goes into space, its navigation and its position and where it is monitored from Earth-based systems.
Yeah.
So it's not exact and it's not foolproof and it's not capable of properly understanding impacts of what, you know, gravitational pull might be or what's needed. This will be in space doing all those tests and calibrations, and it will feed into the systems that will later come along, which will be the proper guidance and sort of docking systems and stuff like that for things going to the moon.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually, I'm quite excited about it because I like space stuff. This is like the first step in a lot of steps to actually having the ability for human beings to not go to some shitty little space station, but to actually go to a base, a moon base.
Isn't that like what the Nazis did after World War II? They made a Nazi base on the moon, and they also moved underground with the dinosaurs.
Yeah, look, I'm hoping to see them when I go there, just to, you know, reunite with them.
Holy shit, Hitler's still alive.
Yeah, he's a Hitler wandering around with a helmet on. Fucking.
He's got like a robot mech body, and it's just his head. Yeah, with a little mustache.
Little mustache.
It's like Wolfenstein shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You never know what you find when you get up there. You really won't. But anyway, that's that. So that will be interesting as that evolves.
Might not happen in our lifetimes.
No, might not. Might not. But you never know. I guess. They could get up there, and this thing could get up there and find it's all really stable, and everything's really good, and everything just cruises along after that, and you know.
We. I can take over 50, the galaxy.
50 years' time, we could be, you know, it'd be like taking the fucking bus. You just go and jump on a rocket ship and go to the moon. Have coffee.
I hope.
Yeah, yeah. There'll, no doubt there'll be a Macca's up there or something. Starbucks.
Yeah.
Well, the Starbucks will work, wouldn't it? Because it's up in space with the stars. Ah, there we go. It's
good marketing.
There we go. First Starbucks in space. Anyway, fucking miles before that happens. On to my tips for young bucks. So today, some really simple concepts that took me a while to learn when I was a lot younger. And it is the concept of paying attention. Now, I know this seems really weird, and you probably get told your parents about 1,000 times to pay attention. There's a difference between paying attention when someone's talking to you and paying attention to the world around you and to everything that's happening around you. When I was younger, I didn't do that. I didn't keep myself up to speed with what was happening around the world, and I was caught out so many times by not being fucking aware of shit. Like, you know, rocking up to the petrol station and not understanding that fucking there'd been some sort of global crisis and fuel was massively expensive, and me rocking up with me $50 thinking I'm gonna fucking cruise the world. Yeah. And I put like $2 worth of fuel in my car. So it's about, but not being oblivious, because it's very, very easy to be oblivious to most things. It's very, very easy to stay in your own lane and stay very comfortable, and there's all those wonderful things you hear about on Twitter of just stay in your lane. Fuck that. When you're younger, don't stay in your lane. Like get out there and get after it. When you get older and shit like that, and you've got a wife and kids and you've got commitments and stuff, then you stay in your lane. When you're younger, you could go out and get after things. But to do that, you need to start paying attention, because it can save you later on. So if you get into a workplace, into a workspace, everyone fucking hates it, and it's a shit place to work, it's very easy just to go, it's just a job, and just come in and do it and go. Eventually, it'll start to wear on you and eat at you. and eventually you'll be just as bitter and grumpy as everyone else. And when you go to get a job after that and you go to interview, all you're going to do is project that grumpiness and bitterness that you already have for the other place when you go for the new one. So you won't get anywhere. So you've got to be aware of these things when you're younger. And what it does is, from being aware and paying attention to different things, even things that might not be what you're interested in, what you're involved in or whatever, is it helps build those skills and tools that you'll need later on for success. So it will help the more you actually pay attention to things. And that could just be paying attention to how people talk to each other or treat each other. It could be paying attention, you know, when we come up to, you know, we're getting to the first, coming up to an election for kids, you know, your age. This will be the last time you see an election before you actually have to vote on it. Because once you turn 18, you have to vote on it. So by the time the next election comes along, you'll be having to vote. So now, while you don't have the commitment of voting and you don't have to make a choice, it is really a good time to pay attention to what politicians now are saying. Because what they say now is what they're going to commit to for the next 3 years or whatever. When it comes your time to vote, if you're not paying attention now, you'll go to vote, and if they haven't delivered anything, you won't know it. You know, if they've said, we're gonna like make street racing legal and close roads, and then they don't, but you aren't paying attention now, when it gets to the next election, they might go, we're gonna make street racing legal and we're going to do this and this and this, and you go, hang on a second, you fucking said that last time, you didn't do it. Because it's important to pay attention early enough when you don't have the commitment to make an action on it, because then you can look at it impartially and probably understand it. So it will help. I do encourage people, when you get to this election, as boring as fucking election campaigns can be, just pay attention to what they're saying and pay attention to what they're committing to over the next 3 years, because it'll help you when it comes to your first time to vote. You won't wander in absolutely clueless and go to the person next to you and go, what are you voting for? Right, because it's what you do the first time, because most young people don't pay attention. So I'm saying, pay attention to this one. That's my tip. Pretty simple. Moving on to my stoic quote. My stoic quote this week is from Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, isn't that
the former US Prime Minister? Not Prime Minister. President, sorry. Americans. Yeah. President.
Yeah.
They do have a prime minister, though, I think. But anyway, president. Oh. Former US president. Very wise man. Many considered a stoic among himself.
Oh.
And this is the quote I've got from him for this week. It says, greatness comes only to those who seek not how to avoid obstacles, but how to overcome them. So it's along the lines of, you've got an easy path, you've got a hard path. You can take the easy path of something, but you don't learn shit from it. So when the path ends, you got nothing. You got the hard path, lots of freaking obstacles, lots of things to get over. When the path ends, you've got a lot from it. So the real great people, the great, great people of our world, you know, you look at like the Steve Jobs of the world and shit like that, they had massive obstacles to overcome. Now, they could have avoided those obstacles and built a shit product and gone nowhere.
Yeah.
But they didn't avoid those obstacles. They persevered and they kept tackling the obstacles and they overcame the obstacles. And once you overcome an obstacle, you become better. So greatness comes from learning to overcome obstacles, not avoiding them. You will never get great from avoiding things. Never. People have avoided things their whole life, end up fucking working at McDonald's when they're 63. You'll never get anywhere if you avoid things. If you learn how to overcome obstacles, you'll achieve greatness.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to overcome fucking everything. Some things you just do have to go, fuck that, and walk away. But that's not what your first course of attack should ever be. You should always try and overcome your obstacles. Right, yo. On to Australia's prime ministers. Now, I thought, last week when Prime Minister Lyons passed away, I thought I wasn't going to do the man who was interim Prime Minister. I was going to skip past but it decided not to. It's an interesting story. So, at the passing of Mr. Lyons, when he passed away, a man called Earl Page became Prime Minister. Now, he filled in for the Prime Minister's role. He was leader of the Country Party. Excuse me. And his story is somewhat interesting. So, I'm going to go through it anyway, and it won't take quite so long. And then we can get to the big one next week. So he was born in 1880 in Grafton, New South Wales, to an Australian mother and a British father. His first middle name was Christmas.
What?
Christmas, which he hated.
Yeah.
But it was an obligation made by his family to keep a family name going. So someone in their lineage had a last name of Christmas. Probably first name of father or something. I don't know. it's a Nicholas or something. Anyway, first middle name was Christmas. He started uni at the age of 15.
What?
To become a doctor.
I think you can do that anymore.
No, you can't do it. Well, you probably could, but you'd have to pass a lot of fucking tests to do it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, he did. He graduated at age of 21. Worked in a few hospitals and things like that. Started his own small private hospital and stuff. Enlisted in World War One towards the end of World War One as a surgeon.
Yeah.
He served on the Ballarat, so the Navy ship Ballarat. He also served in Cairo, England, and France in various levels. You know, in England, I think he was like a chief surgeon. In France, he worked there at the end of the war as part of the evac. You know, the casualty evac, getting all the casualties out at the end of the war.
Yeah.
So he did, you know, a lot of that, you know, that hard surgery. Remained a doc once he got into Parliament. He sort of remained involved in the medical profession, but not a practicing doctor type thing. He did help some ailments of politicians, and I think he took someone's appendix out once or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
He was elected into Parliament in 1919. He actually got in as an independent, which is quite rare, and it's still quite rare to today. So some independents do get in, but you need quite a fucking lot of money. And he had support from, I think, the Agricultural Farmers Association or some bloody thing. Once he got in, he joined the Country Party after the election. No great surprise. And became leader of the Country Party in 1921. So a couple of years later, he became leader of the Country Party, which at that point in time held a fair few seats, but not huge. Because he was part of a coalition government, so one of those early leaders involved the Country Party, he was treasurer for Australia from 1922 to 1929. And throughout that period, did a fair bit of work in a few different things, trying to make the Commonwealth Bank into more of a privatised bank. Gave them control over the printing of money and paper and stuff like that. So the Commonwealth Bank was the bank that got the nation going.
Yeah.
You know, it's still around today, but it's a completely private company and it's not worth a damn. But back then it was a big thing. He received a knighthood in 1938. So he was Sir Earl Page.
Wow.
9 other prime ministers received knighthood in that year. 9 prime ministers, because he wasn't prime minister yet. He was the only non-prime minister to receive knighthood, which is very interesting. And you know, they don't really get knighthood too much now anyway. He became prime minister, obviously, following the death of Mr. Lyons. He was prime minister for a total of 19 days.
That's the shortest so far,
The shortest so far. Not the shortest to be, but the shortest so far. When he was replaced, because the party that Lyons was part of had to find a successor and they were going to be voted in, he was only an interim prime minister whilst that process happened after 19 days. He went on a massive personal attack at the new prime minister, which I won't say his name because I ruin it for next week, in Parliament. And he accused him of incompetence and you know, betraying the former prime minister and all these weird things and wonderful things. He He also accused him of being a coward because he didn't enlist in World War One. Bearing in mind, neither did most of the other politicians.
Yeah.
You know, Page did because he wasn't, you know, freaking politician when that happened. So yeah, he went on a big freaking argument and big spat, and eventually that got him kicked out as leader of the party, of the country party. They just went, nope. And he went to the they sent him to the UK after that, and he became part of the foreign, you know, diplomatic type thing. It was involved in the War Office for World War II. You know, just really, really struggled. Couldn't get back to Australia. They wouldn't bring him back. They eventually brought him back many, many years later. So that is the entirety of Australia's 15th Prime Minister, Sir Earl Page.
So he actually counted as one. He's 15.
He was sworn in. Yeah, he was sworn in. I didn't actually think he was. I thought he was just an interim position, but he was sworn in as Prime Minister.
Do we even need one? Because that wasn't very long. Do we really need a Prime Minister for like 15, 16 days?
Well, I think for there to be a functioning working government, you need a Prime Minister. Where there's no functioning government, there either has to be an election process or no government, effectively. It needs a Prime Minister. So, because you can't pass any legislations or anything without a functioning government. So they, yeah, for some reason, swore him in. He really didn't do anything in that time.
He's kind of sat in the chair the whole time. He's like, ooh.
He's just like, I like this. This is nice. I wonder if he tried to move into the lodge. Imagine that. It's taken like a week for the poor widowed lady of Mr. Lyons to unpack and get everything out of there. And then he'd probably move in and about 2 days later go, right, get out.
You're gonna sleep there for like two nights.
Yeah, he's still got his shit in his garage, in the garage. Like, he's just like, it's just got nothing there. But a very short tenure as Prime Minister. But the reason I wanted to include him after doing the research was he was actually contributed quite a lot over the course of his time as Treasurer, and he actually contributed a lot to government whilst not being, you know, at the very top of it.
Yeah.
So still quite involved, still, you know, quite a significant history. Sadly, just 19 days and had a flip out and was, you know, sent on his way.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And I think being Prime Minister was for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think everyone just went, maybe not. And he tried to not have the next Prime Minister brought in, and he tried to get people to come back and contest it and go to re-election, and everyone was like, nope.
He just wanted to stay for long. He was like, no, more than 19 days, come on.
Yeah, at least let me get to 20. One more day so I can get to 20. Especially, you know, when you look back at the history from that point in time and everyone else has served much longer than that as Prime Minister, he's probably like, fuck it. But anyway, that's him. We'll move on to a more long-standing Prime Minister in the next episode.
Yeah. Which might actually do something.
Well, when you look at it, it's 1939.
Oh.
So.
Wait, is it already the next Prime Minister?
So, he was only Prime Minister for 19 days in 1939.
Oh, so World War II's gonna...
So we're on the cusp of commencement of World War II. So when it's nearly there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the next Prime Minister will be, I think, in at the start of World War II.
Yeah, I think. The first small half.
Yeah, for at least the start.
First year, apparently. I learnt again in history.
Yeah.
That the first year was like a phony war. Nothing happened.
Mm.
They just kind of was like, we're in war, but we don't actually have anything yet. We've got to get supplies. Just wait, Hitler. Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Let us get our stuff ready. Jesus.
Yeah. There was like a declaration of war, and then everyone's like, oh, what do we do?
Yeah.
Where is it? Who's in it? Yeah, it's yeah.
Nothing really happened until 1940, I think.
Yeah, it took a bit for it to actually, kick off to the point where there was, you know, conflict.
Yeah.
You know, there was declaration of war and then talking about for conflict. But anyway, we will see next week with that. And that is largely it.
Yep.
I don't have anything else. You got anything else?
No.
All right. That's it. We will depart there. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for listening. And we will speak to you again next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.